We're here in the Rialto Theatre. It's midweek. It's Brighton Fringe. And even on a Wednesday, there are shows happening this evening. This is the calm before the storm. So you may hear some cleaning going on in the background, some preparation. And I'm joined by Joanna Rosenfeld and Sam Chittenden. Now, this is a joint interview. This is a piece called Ross and Rachel. And it's also a new collaboration, I believe.
It is. Yes, we've known each other for a few years, but we've never actually worked together. So that's been great.
Yeah.
That was Sam, by the way, and this is Joanna.
Yeah, I'm very excited to work with Sam. I've been aware of her work for a long time, and I was lucky to do a mastery workshop with her some time back. And when she approached me for this piece, it was a real pleasure.
So let's just get into that story, that moment. I always love them when moments give birth to something. So there was you, and quite often people say, I saw your work and I wanted to work with you. This was, I was in your workshop, but she approached you, so I want the full story of this.
Okay, so yes, I've seen Joanna's work as part of the workshop that she did with me, but I've also seen her piece on motherhood, and I've also been aware of this play by James Fritz, which is a very odd structured play and requires an actor with a very strong physicality to the actor plays male and female halves of a couple, so it takes quite a distinct kind of performance, and I thought Joanna could pull it off.
So she came to your workshop, which I'm going to find out about. This hard-hitting, high-quality, investigative fringe review journalism, which is very rare. So what did you think of Sam through her workshop?
I thought Sam is generous, genuinely interested in people, authentic voice, truthful, and a force for good, really. You know, she wants the work we did in the workshop was all about giving people their voice back, and peeling back shame and things that stop you from expressing yourself in the most truthful way that you can.
And Sam, you're one of those people, you work in theatre, but you also use theatre to advance the human condition.
It's a very grand way of saying it, but yeah, but for personal development. So, and as Joanna says, a lot of that, whether I'm working with performers or individuals who want to have more say in their life, or leaders who are looking at how they communicate with others, it's all about enabling people to express what's true for them.
So generous, Sam Chittenden. What did you see in Joanna that made you approach her and say, I'd like to work with you?
Well, as I say, her physical performing skills. So I saw her, both her flexibility and her subtlety, because often when you see physical performers, they do caricatures of things. So I was really impressed by Joanna's flexibility and subtlety. And also just I knew that I could work with her, that we would genuinely collaborate on something and be able to listen to each other and challenge each other.
So at that stage, was this I'd like to work with you on something, or I've already got something in mind?
No, I wanted to do this play, so I was looking for somebody at that moment specifically to work on that play. But Joanna and I had also talked a few times about wanting to work together on something. So if it hadn't been this, if we'd not been able to find the rights for this, for example, sure would have found another opportunity at some point.
Now, of course, we can't go into this in detail because it's hard to describe these things, but describe what working together looks like, sounds like. Looking at each other, wondering who's going to speak.
Okay, so I think what's interesting for me is that we both are in service of the piece. So working together for this piece was reading the piece, trying to decipher the piece, finding the voices that are in there and how they want to be, and finding a collaborative understanding about what the purpose is of putting the piece on and what the purpose of this piece is for an audience. So why would they, what should happen to them? How should they be touched? Where's the ambiguity for their journey? Where's the clarity? So we come into a room and we take the text and we investigate it like detectives, really, in this piece. And then I play. So I play in all sorts of ways. I think each single section of this piece has been done about 20 different varieties. And Sam is observing, watching, and it's like she's putting puzzle pieces together, because she has the bigger overall structure in her head, And then she goes, okay, well, this is the right direction, this is the wrong direction. Let's put these two things together and see how they resonate with each other. And if they resonate well, then let's keep going in that direction.
So I love that word resonance. And I'm also interested in when we talk about collaboration. Collaboration can become a kind of collusion that doesn't work. So when, and you've used I and we, so when do you, when is it important in collaboration to remain an I? And when is it important to actually be the we?
So I think there's an ebbing and flowing. So I think we have been, there have been times when it's been about, as Joanna says, the big picture and the kind of the decision making, the big chunks of decision making, which has been my key role. There have been times when it's about what's going on for the character. Mm-hmm. So what's actually happening in that moment, which has very much been Joanna's I. And then there have been times that we've put that together. So we've kind of come at things from two different directions and worked out how that fits. But I think there's absolutely an ebbing and flowing of that, passing between us and then working genuinely collaboratively as well.
And then, you know, when there's that trust and that resonance, then disagreement becomes possible.
Yeah. So as I said, you know, the challenge, I've certainly challenged myself. I think we've both challenged ourselves and each other in working together on this. And so knowing there's sufficient trust and honesty and grit in the relationship to be able to challenge each other for the benefit of the piece, to make something clearer and to maintain a relationship at the end of it, you know, that's...
So now give me some insights into what Ross and Rachel's about.
Okay, so... so the first thing to say is as a play, I mean, Joanna talked about kind of the work we've done on it. It's a phenomenally interesting play to work with because there are no stage directions in it and there are no character names in it. So it's just a bunch of text. It's described as a piece for two voices played by one actor.
A female actor.
Mm. Yeah. So, and those two voices are ostensibly Ross and Rachel of Friends fame, but kind of that's almost where that sort of piece of the thread ends. So on one level, it's the story of what might happen to Ross and Rachel after the cameras stop rolling and their kind of reality hits in and they start to grow into middle age.
So maybe the TV sequel that has not yet been made.
That they couldn't make.
Yeah,
because it's not where you would expect Ross and Rachel to go. It's a very gritty, difficult, dark relationship and description. It's much more honest than a television sitcom can be about what relationships are really like. So I think James Fritz, in writing it, has kind of... You know, one of the things he said is that he used the idea of Ross and Rachel as a shorthand to get the audience to a place of understanding what it was he was writing about. So it's just a kind of a quick way into, well, here's a couple that we kind of think we know. And then from there, it kind of unfolds in a way that you just wouldn't expect.
So I've got a three-part question here. I think you'll find the first two parts easier to answer, and you might not be able to answer the third one, or it might be a surprise. So the first one, maybe you've been asked before. So if you were fans of Friends, what would you experience here in the theatre? But what if you've never seen Friends before? What would you experience as this as a piece of theatre? And then the third one, and I'm not applying this to me, but I'm winking at you. What if you hate Friends beyond life itself, and then you come and see this piece of theatre?
Do you want to start?
Okay, so if you were fans of Friends, you would have a... Well, there was a fan of Friends who saw an early rehearsal, and he described it as a fan fiction set 10 years after the last episode. And there's lots of references that will make you giggle, and there's lots of references that are turned on their head and will make the laughter stick in your throat. So it's a real surprise where it takes you. But there are satisfyingly enough references to enrich that part.
And so that could alter the way you go back and watch the old DVDs?
Yes, it will. If you're not a friend of fans, friend of friends.
And she hasn't even been, there's water here on the table.
it doesn't matter. The relationship that Fritz established with these two characters is a very clear relationship of a, of a couple that has been together for a while. They've got a child. They have different commitments to the relationship. And what happens is so big within the piece that all of the references to Friends are totally incidental and not necessary for you to get something from
it. Yet that rookie audience member might look along their row and wonder what people are laughing at.
That's true. That's true. But people might also not laugh. You know, we don't know whether they'll laugh yet.
I think it's an interesting dynamic. And I've seen theatre before, which is based on, you know, another book or another film. And actually you can get a nice tension in the audience where there are those in the know and that those aren't. And then suddenly you see those not in the know are getting something that those in the know aren't getting.
Yeah, so I should maybe say that I'm not a Friends watcher, so I didn't know anything about this couple.
That's interesting.
And when I read the script after Sam passed it on to me, I absolutely adored it. But I don't know anything about these characters, so I had to do a lot of research to just see where are the references, what is actually being mentioned, because I love the piece not for the Friends, but for what it is about relationships. And may I mention it? The death piece. There's a death in this piece, and the way it's dealing with dying and death is absolutely up my street, and I adore it, and I'm really, really excited to be able to play that.
Okay, I am going to put a spoiler alert in the text below this interview.
Yeah, spoiler.
Yeah, so, I mean, coming back to your question about will people feel left out, the references are very subtle and are not necessary. You know, the piece works absolutely without it. I think they... But they're nice. They're in there. So it'll be that little bit of, uncovering, a bit of detective work for those who want to do that. But, I mean, like Joanne, I'm not a fan of Friends. And I would say if you hate Friends, and I guess what it represents. So if you hate a kind of sugary, simplified version of what relationships might be like, and you're much more into gritty, real... challenging descriptions of the reality of romantic relationships, I would say this is absolutely the play for you. So you should, you know, if you hate Friends even more, you should come and see it.
And possibly I might then go back. I said me now, I've outed myself. I might go back and watch Friends and again have a different perspective on it and maybe even like it.
maybe
or find things to like in those characters, maybe see some of the ambivalence. And so one of the things about the two people in the relationship is they're trapped in this relationship because everyone expects Ross and Rachel to stay together. Everyone desperately wants them to stay together, to get married. They hate it when either of them are with anybody else. So the pressure that puts on this celebrity couple changes the nature of their relationship.
It sounds a bit Godot-esque, you know, there.
Yes.
You couldn't imagine Vladimir and Estragon splitting, could you?
No. But you could imagine them having to make each other endless cups of coffee, because that's what happens in France, you know. Yeah. But here we are in the coffee shop again, drinking coffee again.
Yeah. And so then, as a piece of drama, you've got a lot to carry there, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I love doing that because, I suppose I it's my fourth one-woman show, but the first one I didn't co-create and co-write. But I love that medium. I love working with the audience and with a piece of text or a piece of theatre and shaping it. So, that is what I adore about theatre anyway, the shared experience with an audience. That's what makes me very excited and jump out of bed to do it, yeah.
And so from those early drafts of the show, how did it develop?
One of the things that changed is that the difference between the two halves of this couple became much more subtle, much less obvious. So as a piece of physical theatre playing both him and her, there were times when it was, you know, physically very different. And when that thing that happens when somebody's playing two characters where they leap across the room to talk to each other and talking to you and then turning and talking to the other. And we've worked a lot on ironing those kind of things out. So the shift, because as well as seeing this as a play about two people, you can equally read it as a kind of something that's playing out in somebody's head. either a super fan of Friends or just somebody whose mind, whose psyche is becoming fractured.
But for you, say, in a more directorial mode, and knowing that this is an iconic TV series, and there are very audible, maybe even visual reactions from the audience, is that affecting how you see it?
Well, we've not really gone for the Friends. You know, it's not styled like Friends. Okay. We've not got canned laughter, you might be pleased to know. So we're not channeling that genre very strongly in the style of the piece.
But the shocking thing for me being in a family that loves Friends. let that echo a bit. Is that I've always thought American canned laughter is often there because people wouldn't really laugh if there was a studio audience. They'd be told it's not true, it's just the convenient technical way of doing it. Uh-huh. But I've sat in that room, and where the canned laughter is, they are laughing in the room. And I genuinely believe there was no canned laughter. Those people in my room, my family, are laughing because they find it funny.
It's funny, yes.
But I'm not.
Well, one of those people in your house came to see it. He's the fan who told
me. Yes. I don't want to out him on here, but he knows who he is.
Okay. He knows who he is. Okay. And he liked the piece. Yeah, yeah, and he's a fan of Friends.
You asked him for some input, I
guess,
as well.
Yes, we did. Yes, he gave some really lovely input.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think what has happened is that we had to work really hard on stopping taking sides. Because when we read the piece originally, the voices were very specific, and it was really easy to make judgments about the two characters and to take sides and make it quite black and white. And we found that wasn't helpful for what we were trying to do for the audience. The more we took sides, and I took sides and had sympathies with one of the characters and made the other one less likable, the less interesting the piece was, really. And so I think, to answer the question about where, you know, early and now, we have really worked quite hard on making both of the characters and their individual journeys sympathetic and showing the tragedy of what happens if people are on two different rails and they just can't connect anymore. You know, and that there's a tragedy that plays itself out in the frustration with each other that is very common, that we all have in some relationships. And I think that's something that we don't see in Friends. You know, when we watch the sitcom, we don't see that true desire for connection. It stays on a superficial place where James Fritz has very purposefully critically moved it away from.
And made the characters more than their caricature. So they're more than the prom queen and the nerd that they're described as being, that, you know, this is who they are, and it's all about their relationship. Right. So you start to see, well, what would happen? What might happen after they split up? What would one of them do that would be different? What other aspects of them would we see?
So the final question in this interview, which is pure wild speculation by the sound of it, given that you're not great Friends fans anyway, which is fine, and that this is a piece of theatre, a thing in itself, a thing in its own right. But just for the audio, the characters, Ross and Rachel, watch this piece from the back row, and also the actors who played them. And then, you know, you go up to them afterwards or they come up to you. What do you think the conversation might sound like?
I wonder if they'd actually recognise themselves.
I don't think. I think they would. Not the characters, but the actors. I think the actors, David Swimmer and Jennifer Aniston, would love this piece.
And they'd want to be in it if it ever was made into a movie, I guess, too.
Well, I think Jennifer Aniston would play this part because it's written for a female actor with two voices. I think she would love to play this part. Yeah. I think she would revel in it.
It's a stretch, isn't it?
I think Dave, the way I understand David Schwimmer to function is he's a very bright, very switched on man who loves theatre, loves life art, and is up for any kind of stretch of something that he might have been involved in or not. Just to remind ourselves, when we started this process, he was a lookalike was photographed stealing some beer up in in Liverpool or on the Wirral, and everybody was saying, that was David Schwimmer. And he was going, no, I was in Chicago. He got involved in the Twitter feed, in a Twitter frenzy around it. Mm. I think he's a very, yeah, I think they would both love it. I think Ross and Rachel would find it very painful to watch, as in the characters.
Because you're showing them their future, aren't you?
Showing them the future, but also showing them maybe the things that were going on that they never talked about. Mm. You know, the hurt that they dished out to each other when Ross went off on the break and had this affair, and she saw it as an affair and he saw it, but we were broken up. That kind of hurt doesn't actually, in Friends, doesn't get digested. But that is the kind of pain that relationships hold for many years. And it simmers under the surface, and eventually it erupts, you know.
Joanna Rosenfeld and Sam Chittenden, they're going to be at the Rialto Theatre. They'll be there for you.
Yes!
Are you going? Thanks for talking to us.